Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today's January 12th, 2011. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight with our guest, Ms. Sandra Pruitt out of Los Angeles. And tonight we're giving tribute to her son, Jarrell Omar Green, who was murdered in March of 2009 by a gang member. And rest in peace, Jarrell. And we're going to let Sandra tell her story tonight and let you know of the interventions that she is starting to be able to help the youth in her community. Before we introduce Sandra, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yes, I would like to say hello, everyone, and thank everyone for joining in every Wednesday on the show. And we would like to thank our guests for taking the time to come on the show. And we're not going to hold you, and no longer we're going to let her introduce herself formally, and we're going to get the show rocking.
Hello, Lucinda and Rob. My name is Sandra Pruitt. I'm a mother of three, and in March the 11th of 2009, my 26-year-old son, Jarrell Omar Green, was killed. He left to walk to the store. He met up with someone in this neighborhood. We had just moved into this LA area where we live now. So he walked to the store talking with a guy who we believe was in another gang. And from what we've been told, someone from another gang that he was having problems with saw them walking and shot the guy my son was walking with, and I don't want to mention names, and shot Jarrell and killed Jarrell. The other guy was wounded, but he's now back at home with his family. They did catch the young 18-year-old boy who killed my son, and we are currently going to pre-trial.
Wow. So the trial's still going on. And they caught the shooter?
Yes, they did. Yes. Actually, it was a blessing. They caught him even before Jarrell was laid to rest. So within a couple of days, the detectives and the police did a really good job, and they had a lot of leads. And I would like to give a shout-out to the interventionists, the ceasefire, Southern California Ceasefire Committee, because they have gang interventionists that work with that committee, and they were able to talk to this young man and help him to turn himself in. So I really want to give them a shout-out.
Right, and Skip Townsend had a lot to do with that, from what I understand, right?
Right. Right. Skip Townsend. Yes.
Right. Yeah, they do a lot of awesome work out there in Compton and L.A., and, you know, a lot of those guys used to be gang members, so they know what it's like to be out on the streets and be able to talk to the gang members and the boys out there. So big guts to Skip and Second Call and Ceasefire and Vicky, Lindsay, and all the people out there in Compton doing the work out on the streets.
Yes, because that is really important. You know, having no idea, I'm a full-time parent as well as a mother that works. And my job was to keep boys, I have two sons, keeping them out of trouble, making sure they were going to school and being responsible citizens. So that's what I was supposed to be doing, and I did a really good job. But not knowing all the elements in the streets now, Ceasefire has been real helpful to me. And they've given me a different understanding because, needless to say, I'm very, very mad. I'm very sad, heartbroken, and angry that a young 18-year-old would not know how to control his anger for whatever reason and, you know, take my beloved son away from me.
I said nobody has that right, and that's what we need to teach these young kids. You can't just carry a gun around and expect, you know, if you're going to carry a gun, you're expecting to use it, and eventually you will, bottom line. So, you know, if you're out there living that life, you don't need to be carrying a gun because you will take somebody's life, and then your own life is taken as well because you will go to prison or you'll be shot.
That is so regretful. I think that our young people today are growing up with a lack of love for themselves or others, you know, and no sense of pride. And they have no idea that this boy may or may not have been in trouble before. I do not know that. But this one thing has changed not only our lives, but it has changed his life forever, you know. And
right.
The consequences of the things that young people are doing that lead them to a no end, you know, of destruction. It's really sad.
I'm really
heartbroken.
Right. Now, Sandra, in your bio that you sent me, you talked a little bit about your son's having a blood disease. And is that sickle cell anemia?
No, it isn't. You know, I can't recall the exact initials. It's not sickle cell at all. It's a blood disease at the time that athletes mostly get, where sweat gets into their bloodstream. It's some initials of something like MSRP, something like that. And it had gotten into his bone. It was starting to eat away at his bones. So it's not sickle cell. No, he's really healthy right now. And actually, tonight he plays for Mount SAC Junior College, and tonight they're having a basketball game.
Good luck to them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let me know when you do find out the exact term. I'd like to look that up and see what that is. But let's go back to before. You're a single mom. You have two sons, one daughter. You said during this one time when one of your sons was sick in the hospital, you know, I don't know if you lost your job or what happened, but you ended up homeless for a time. And why don't you go back and just kind of tell us your story?
Oh, okay. A couple of years ago, I had become homeless. And I was working a really good job, but not having a stable environment for me and my kids, it kind of took a toll on all of us. And we moved into a one-room, I guess we'll call it an apartment. And while we were living there, that's where my younger son came and got the blood disease. And at the time, we didn't know what it was. We really were really struggling, so we were all sitting in this one room. And we even made a joke about when my daughter wanted to go to sleep, everybody had to lay down because we had to all stop moving around. There wasn't a lot of space in our place. And and so just having to go back and forth with taking him to, he was admitted into the hospital, and so me having to run back and forth, visiting him and try to take care of my daughter, I really couldn't work, and I didn't have any other source of income, and so then I found myself going on welfare, and then through that, there's a program there that led us to a transitional housing program where we lived for 2 years. Kevin was in the hospital for 2 months. And then after he came home, I had been set up to have a surgery myself. So then that took me away from even looking for another job while I had to go in the hospital and get myself together. So we moved into the transitional living, and it was a 2-year program, and there are certain requirements where, you know, I had to get a job and save, you know, X amount of dollars. And I was really proud of myself because I did all of that. I've been basically a single parent all of their lives. Jarrell was 26 years old. So I have worked really hard raising my kids and, you know, and through life and the challenges, we wound up in the transitional housing. But then I was able to save money and get my finances really in control. And then I found a wonderful house for us to live in. My son's a very tall. Jamin is 6'8", the one that's playing basketball right now, and Jarell is 6'5". And we just needed more space because sometimes not a lot of places can house, you know, tall people. So I found a wonderful house for us to live into, and I'm really proud that my kids, you know, were doing well in school and well in their desires in life. And we had only lived here. Oh, this is a sad part. We had only lived here for 6 months. We moved in this house on my birthday in June. And in March, my son was murdered. I came home a little late from work on this particular day. And Jarell told me that he gave me a kiss. He always kissed me. He was my loving son. And he told me that he would be right back. And he never came back. The helicopter was flying around my house soon after he left to go to the store, and it was flying right over top of my house as if that was a godsend or something. I went outside because it was flying over my house and all of the noise, but who knew? I had no idea what was going on. I waited for him to come home, but he's 26, so I don't worry about him because he's doing his 26-year-old thing. I'm a preschool teacher, though, and I needed to get some supplies from the store. So later on that night, I went to the store, and where he got murdered is around the corner from my house. So when I went to the store, I saw the yellow tape, and I said, oh, God, I hope everybody's okay. But who knew? You know, I went to the store, and I came back home, and since we had just moved in here, we really didn't have a phone. I had just gotten our phone turned on. We were all using our cell phone. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, they called me. And I knew instantly in my spirit is about Jarell. When the detective called and he said that my son had been shot, I just asked him where he was and I hung up the phone. And I went to the hospital. And oh, my goodness. When I got to the hospital, you know, it's so hard for me to say this, but they told me that they had done all they could for my son and that he was dead.
That had to be so hard.
You know, it is very hard and unbelievable and very heartbreaking.
And Jarell wasn't even involved in gangs or anything. He'd actually been in college, played basketball, and then had an injury. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what he was doing in his life that was positive.
Okay, yes, he loved the sport of basketball. He's a leader, son. So wherever he goes, he's going to be the best at it. When he got injured, he messed up his knee, ACL. And he didn't desire to be in school anymore. So while looking for a job, he decided he wanted to find another career for himself. He started working on motorcycles. And there he met some other guys. And he became the president of the Blackhawks South San Diego.
Motorcycle club?
Yeah, motorcycle set. Yeah, for the Blackhawks. Yeah.
Okay.
I think he had dreams of opening up his own motorcycle shop. You know, he was just a go-getter and a leader. So that's what he wanted to save his money towards, to open up the shop and, you know, help out his brothers
right.
in the motorcycle club.
Right. Well, I'm going to turn the mic over to Rob for a minute, and I'll be back with you in a few minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, how you doing, young lady? Like I said, I appreciate you coming to the show, and we definitely send out our condolences here at the Streets Don't Love You Back movement to you and your family and your loss, you know. But
hey,
what I would like to ask you, you know, what would you tell these other mothers out here that's grieving just like you are that has lost a son in this type of incident that had nothing to do with gang life and different things like that? They're still going through that grieving period. And I just want to say, when a mother loses a child, I think that grieving period is a lifetime grieving period, because that's something that a mother carries for 9 months and, you know, conceive birth. So I feel that's a lifetime of grievement, but it's just how you handle that in their own way. You know, is that correct to say?
Yes. It's a process, and it's definitely, you know, no quick answer. Actually, I'm still every day crying and figuring out ways to keep myself going. It's a real struggle. I thank God that I have two other kids that keep me going, you know. I would definitely say to get a support group, and it can be a few people that can be sensitive to what the mother is going through, because there's a lot of crying and there's a lot of, you know, times of not being real depressed, but just really being sad, you know. And definitely, I know I wouldn't make it if it was not for the grace of God. I couldn't do this by myself. Although, on the flip side, I'm angry at, you know, God and all of that, because you just don't feel like it's fair, but life is not fair, so I understand that. But I just feel that for a mom or a dad that has someone that they can confide in, that they can cry with, that will be there with them to laugh with, and to keep encouraging themselves is the most important thing that we have to do. And just make sure that you get up every single morning thanking God for another day and find a way to give back. Yeah, find a way to give back and to help out, you know, maybe become to work with other kids is important too, and parents.
Yes, yes. So did your son ever mention, you know, what was his ultimate goal to achieve in life besides what he was trying to get himself into with the motorcycle clubs and things like that? Did he have other dreams and goals on the side that he would speak to you about?
You know, he really, once he got locked in on something, the way he used to play basketball, he was locked into that. Once he had gotten locked into the motorcycle club and his thinking of becoming a businessman of his own, something to do with motorcycles, having a motorcycle shop and a store. He wanted to have a motorcycle shop where they repaired them, where they sold them, and they sold motorcycle merchandise. He really became involved in that greatly. And I want to say that he didn't have any kids, so a whole generation of my family is gone. You know, that hurts a lot as well. That's it. I also realize that if I don't say Jarrell's name almost every day, when I think about him, he'll be gone. So I try really hard to remember him. No, I don't try. I remember him, and I always want to hear his name.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good thing then that, you know, that you keep him in the spotlight, because I think it's very important to have people in the spotlight, you know, especially your child and your loved ones that is taken away. You know, it's just very important to keep them out there for people can not only remember the good things, but remember what can happen, you know, in a blink of an eye, you know. So we have to always be careful on how we act towards our parents and act towards our family and people in general, because, you know, like you said, your son went to the store and he never came back. So I think it's very important to, you know, let people know if you care about them and love them in any kind of way. I think that should be said on a daily basis, because we just never know what life curveball going to throw us, you know?
Exactly. And the first year that he died, I'm such a doer of a person. I felt like I needed to do something. I organized a rally, a marching rally, from where he had gotten killed at to a park that's not that far from there. And I had people come out there with booths about mental health and young men who are fathers and different kind of information to empower our people. You know, I had a young lady perform that is a poetess, and I had some gospel rap out there. It was a pretty good turnout. But what is kind of disheartening is I also started a neighborhood watch club. People are only concerned to me for a little while, and then, you know, they just dissipate. And you're just still, as a parent, struggling, figuring, how can I help? How can I make a difference? I tell people to wake up. I just really want to be that's why I want to start the My Youth Foundation to keep Jarell's name alive and also to let young people know that they are loved and they are important.
Right, exactly. Because there's a lot of kids out here that goes through situations where they be rebellious against their family and rebellious against life, period. And a lot of them go through life thinking someone owe them something, you know. And it comes a time in life, you know, we as individuals, as kids and parents or what have you, you know, we must understand that life owes you nothing if you don't go for nothing in life, for life to owe you nothing. You know, you have to go for something and want to achieve something, you know, and then you can say to yourself, you know, you owe that to yourself, you know, as an individual for achieving things, you know, and we must turn the negativity around with these youths and others out here and let them know, you know, you have to go for something in order to stand for something, you know. Nothing is just dropping out the sky and say, here you go, you know. And,
right.
People don't owe you anything, you feel me? When your parents have you in life, they had you because they loved you and wanted you to come in this world, you know. And then you got some parents, I have to say, that have children and don't even want the children they have. So it's always a bittersweet situation out here in life, you know, because the parents have kids don't mean they wanted them kids, you know. So we have to look at all sides of the coin when we speak on life or don't speak on it at all. Is that fair to say?
Yes, and I would like to really pick up with that point there because I also feel that we as parents have dropped the ball. We're not, you know, I'm from the old school, and I feel we have to go back to the basics of raising our kids to be firm, but to be fair. You like you said, that kids feel that they're so entitled. We're making sure that they have the Jordans and the listening to the latest music and all of that frilly stuff. But, you know, as a preschool teacher, when I talk to some of these little kids who know all these songs and are dressed all cute to the nines, but they don't know their name. They don't know how to spell their name, I should say, or they don't know their birthday. You know, all of that has to be brought back into raising our kids. The streets don't love you back, like you said. And we can't let the streets raise our kids. We have to start being accountable for them. Now, true, we don't always plan to have our babies, but I think that once we do have them, it's up to us to step up and raise them, you know, to make them not want to be on the streets looking for love, that they'll have the love that they need at home. It might sound old-fashioned and corny, but we have gotten so far away from that. And I will say as a result, you know, the young man who, I will never say his name, but the young boy who shot my son was 18 years old. How at 18 is your heart that black that you know, you can be cool enough to carry a gun and then execute somebody? My God.
Exactly.
It's tough.
These kids nowadays, they think guns make them tough. They think selling drugs make them tough. And they think that is the successful mold in life. But what they fail to realize, you know, selling dope, canned pistols, trying to be that thug or that gangster, them the oldest failures in American history, you know. It ain't nobody ever win in that game. You know, there's no successful drug dealer. There ain't no successful thug. Because at the end of the day, the big thug that you see on BET and all of that, at the end of the day, they telling and going into witness protection programs. And they're sitting laughing about all this money they done made, you feel me? But at the end of the day, when a judge, they sit down for 100 years, your whole attitude changed. You ain't that guy no more. You the other guy now. You the one that's sitting down in the other room talking, you know? And these cats just don't have the faintest idea of what life is about, you know, because they're moving so in a negative zone, you know, they not trying to hear what's really real and what's positive out here because they, like I said, too busy trying to think, you know, this drug dealing thing and being this thug and these my homeboys. At the end of the day, player, them is not your homeboys. They'll sell you down the river quicker than you can open up the door for somebody, you know?
Exactly. Right. And, you know, the mentality is I'm just appalled by it. Every month we have been going to the trial, and the young man comes out there with a smirk on his face like he didn't do it. We know hands down that he did it. We have witnesses that say he did it. But the fact that, to me, I don't know if it's a show of bravado or whatever it is, but the fact that he comes out there like that, it makes me think that he doesn't even respect the fact that he could be going away for a long period of time. Hasn't even, like, really sunk in. He's almost been in jail almost 3 years now, you know?
Right.
And it's scary to see a young man that would do such a brass crime and then come out there with no sense of remorse. It makes me so damn angry.
Right.
And he will get his, believe me, because, you know, like we always say, you know, God don't like ugly, ain't crazy about beauty, you know? And you know, that young cat, you know, once he really hit the bubble, you know what I mean, in the joint, you know, he's still going through the small things right now. But once they throw that life sentence on his head and he really up in them cages, then that's going to tell the whole story for him. You know, the tough gangsterism goes out the gate, you know?
Right. But in the meantime, you know, it just, Jarrell was my oldest, and I have two younger kids. He was like the dad, the big brother, and he loved his role as being the big brother and, you know, to protect her of his family and stuff. And what we lost does not compare at all. The fact that down the road he's going to get his and, you know, he's going to be in jail, they said, for 75 years of life, does nothing for me at all. You know,
that don't replace your son.
No. And the fact that the guy doesn't even understand that how much he has changed our lives forever is just so unnerving.
He didn't only hurt himself. He hurt you. He hurt your kids. He hurt the grandmother. He hurt the cousin. He hurt the whole family. You know, he didn't just take your son's life. He took a lot of other people's lives. You feel me?
Right.
Inside of them, you know? And that's what these cats don't be failing to realize, you know? Like I say, everybody want to pour these pistols and be that guy, you know, but they don't fail to realize if you steal a man's coffee, you can replace that coffee. But you take a man's life, you can't replace that. You feel me? That's a done deal, you know?
Right. And it's a ripple effect. Go ahead.
So I was just going to ask you, the young man that killed Jarrell, had he killed anybody before, or was he just in trouble for other gang violence? Obviously, they had a lot of evidence, you say.
You know, that side, I don't even know. I have no idea. I do know that he was in a gang, and I think he was pretty familiar to the police officers and stuff, but to what it fit. Now, I hope he had never killed anybody and been back on the streets. I hope that's not the case, but I don't know his. I don't care. I don't ever ask about him at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And was Jarrell's father involved in his life?
Yes, he still is. We're separated, but he has been very much a part of his son's life. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there for us, too. He's very, very supportive. I am blessed to have a group of people who are there for me, lifting me up. You know, and praying for me and stuff. And his dad is definitely one of those people. Yes.
That's good to hear. What about your other children? How are they coping with this?
I'm really glad that you asked that. Cayman is my 20-year-old son. And what is so ironic about everything is that Cayman's birthday is March the 27th. He turned 19, and we buried his brother on March the 28th. So March is kind of a happy, sad kind of a month for us, but I'm glad that Cayman is going to college. He's a junior college, and he's playing basketball. He has a place to focus, you know, because his brother, they were 8 years apart with his, you know, he's everything, you know, and I know he missed him tremendously, and it's hard for him to even talk to me about it because then he says I become too emotional. But we're our own little small little group, and he's doing well in school. He's focusing. And my daughter was 7. She didn't have as much time with him, with Jarrell. So she misses him, and she's really sad because I'm sad. But we're keeping each other going.
That'd be hard for them too.
Yes, it is. It really is.
Do they have they gone to any support groups, counseling, or anything for kids or teens or young adults?
My daughter does for her school. My daughter does. She has talked to a therapist a couple of times, but came in. He hasn't shut it down. So we talk, and I try to talk to him as much as I can to make, you know, see where he's at and everything. But he's doing the best he can without wanting to talk to somebody outside of our circle.
Right.
Mhm. Yeah.
You know, we have a caller on the line, and I'm gonna see if they want to ask a question or a comment. The last four numbers of telephone number is 5538. And we're going to bring you on. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey,
do you have a question or comment for Sandra?
Oh, yes, this is Adrian. How are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Hey, Adrian. Hi, Godmother. I'm just calling to let you know that I love you and that we all are here for you, and that to keep us going is to really help the next family from not having to go through this. And through the organizations we're utilizing, Ceasefire, they're actually being recognized by the LAPD tonight. Second Call, they're all doing what they need to do and play their position. And you know, I'm just really happy that you keep me motivated and we all keep each other motivated. So thank you for that.
Love you too, Adrian.
And before I do leave, I do want to just go on. What's your motto? That we all can do, we all don't have to do the same thing, but we all
can do something.
Something. Even if it's the kid at the bus stop, the kid that you see walking out of the store, anyone, just stopping them from the beginning and just having some type of network and getting back to the way where society can call your mom, versus having to call the police, you know, to solve things.
Right.
So we're getting
back to take the village to raise, you know, to raise a child. And, you know, everybody, nowadays nobody wants to get involved in anything, and that's what needs to happen. Everybody needs to be involved and needs to step up and say, no, that's wrong, don't do that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We need to learn to look out for each other a little bit more and let young people know that they are important and they are valuable, that we care about them.
Exactly.
Yes, they are. Because that's going to be the future. Everyone who's having kids, we're setting the tempo for their children's future, you know, so we have to work adamantly about correcting the issue or at least dying it down, you know. But as Skip would say from Second Call, that one is too many, you know. So we really do have to work fast.
We do. We have to get back to the basics of working together. Yes.
Well, Godmom, that's it.
Calling.
I love you.
Thank you for calling, Adrian. We love you back. Smooches.
Smooches.
Adrian, you can hang on. You can stay on the line if you want to, and I'll just I'll just mute you so you can just continue listening if you want.
Okay, cool. And this is my first time in, so I appreciate just being informed. Everyone has to be informed. There's always things to learn, so I'm grateful.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in and supporting Sandra. We're going to go ahead and pick the next caller. We just got another caller on the line. The last four digits are 2337. If you'd like to ask Sandra a question, or if you have a comment, or if you just tuned in.
Yes,
hello?
Hi. Yes, hi, hello. This is Lachelle, also known as Lemon Drop. I'm a friend of Jarrell's. His vice president was my husband. But I wanted to comment on Sandra's strength. I mean, she just has such the strength. And I have an 18-year-old son, and I just could not imagine, you know, and just as a mother of a young man, I tried to be as supportive and as strong, you know, for him. I've been listening to the show and just heartbroken. I mean, I'm just my breath is just taken away because I've also gone through some of the trials with her. And the truth is that the heartlessness and the coldness that the guy that did that, he just displays. It just makes me think, what type of upbringing did he have? You know, how did he live? You know, how were they living? Did they show him love? I mean, it just makes me so angry, you know, that he smiles and he smirks and he thinks it's funny. And, yeah, when he gets to jail, I want him to get life, and I hope that his life is horrible. I hope they torture him, and I hope it's horrible, and I hope that every day of his life he hears Jarrell Omar Green, Jarrell Omar Green, because come sentencing day, you can best believe he's going to hear Jarrell Omar Green. It's just ridiculous. And then to look at his support system and his mom, it's like they don't care. As a loving mother, I would have arms stretched to her, you know, and just be loving and just being, you know, everybody loses. You know, everybody is lost in this situation. You know, she's losing her son. You know, Sandra has lost her son. You know, but instead it's just so much cattiness and it's so much anger. And it's sad.
Yeah, absolutely, Linda. And I so appreciate you going to court and being a part of my support system, because we do need each other, and it's a very tough time. I'm glad I don't have to walk those corridors by myself, you know. And it's because it's because of you and my circle that you guys are really keeping me strong, you know. It's you and God, you know. It's nothing short of that, because who knows how this would turn out otherwise, but I just so appreciate you.
Yeah, we love him. You know, we love Jarrell. We called him Nutso, and we loved him. He was just funny. His character, he was just joking, and he would just come to my house all the time. And, you know, and it's a trip when you say things. You have to be careful what you say. I'd say, oh, he's at our house again, and, oh, my God, that boy, you know, he's crazy. I'd wake up, and he'd be in the living room, you know. But now I wish I could walk through my living room and see him sitting there. He had a personality that is irreplaceable, and we miss him. We miss him so much.
Yes, we do. But thank you, Lemon Job. I appreciate you calling.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks for your support, and thanks for the tribute to Jarrell.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Most of the time when you lose someone, and we don't want to say lost because he was definitely murdered. We didn't lose him. He's not, you know, missing or anything like that. We know where he is. And when that happens, it's the feeling. I have three kids, and a third of my heart is just gone. And it's irreplaceable. You know, there's nothing that really fills that gap. And this being in my house and the plans that we had of you know, celebrating my birthday, he would have been 28 on July 28th. We were going to have a really big, you know, party for him. I turned 50 on June the 12th. We were going to have a, you know, celebration. We celebrated life, just like Lemon Drop and Adrian said. He had a good heart and a wonderful spirit. So we celebrated life. And, you know, someone took the life out of me, you know.
Oh, I'm still here.
Hello?
Yeah, you're still here.
Okay, and I've said a few times that I actually feel naked now. You know, I've been just so exposed and so vulnerable not having Jarrell around. So it's my fault. Really, the thing we want to, you know, to talk about as a resolution is for people to be more accountable for their actions, and us as parents to be more accountable for our kids. You know, I know that we're not talking about Jarrell being a perfect kid or anything like that, young man, in the prime of his life, but I know that there were things that he would not do to embarrass me or to let me down, you know. And we need to get back to where we have respect for one another and the way we raise our kids. Some people are not so concerned about raising their kids. They're having kids, but they're not raising them. And they're just letting them spew out onto the streets. And the damage that's being caused on both sides of to the family is just overwhelming.
Right. You know, and like Lemon Drop said, You know, you don't ever know what kind of a background or what kind of a childhood these kids have. You know, these kids that are out in the gang, some of them, that's all they know because that's what their mom and dad did and their aunts and their uncles. Some of them kind of just got in there to have some support to stand up from being bullied. And some of them have great parents that have been taught everything in the world, but they still want to get involved in the gangs and the drugs. And, you know, and it's just too bad that once they do get involved in the gangs and the drugs, that it's pretty much that their life is out of control and their mind is taken over by the leaders that they believe is their family, but in reality is not their family. And it's just, you know, every one of these kids need to be loved and feel loved and you know, and a lot of them probably were good kids but just got turned in the wrong direction, and it's just sad. It's, you know, you just can't figure it out, I guess.
Right. It's a lot of societal ills out there that are taking our kids into different areas of you know, doing things that they later on, should they survive, they definitely regret. But the biggest thing that we have to get back to is empowering our kids through education. They must know how important it is to be educated, because that will also alleviate some of the mischievousness that goes on. You know, they might start off just hanging out with the gang bangers because, you know, they seem like their life is more, quote-unquote, cracking. You know what I mean? They got it going on or whatever. Or they might start robbing people because it's a thrill-seeking kind of thing. But we have to find a way to let our kids become empowered through knowledge and going to school and not hanging out so much, you know. I become nervous when I see a bunch of kids at a bus stop in the middle of the day. I'm concerned for their lives, what could happen to them, or what they might do to someone else.
Right. You know, it just brought me to think about, I work on an ambulance as a registered nurse, and I do 24-hour shifts, and last week, because we're out on the road the whole time, it was about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and we stopped at a Circle K down in kind of central Phoenix and to put gas and get some coffee. And this kid walked, well, I saw him walking down the road, and I just kept watching him, and then he came into the store after me, and I was watching my back because he looked about 13, 14. He was, you know, wearing a T-shirt, no jacket, and it was about 30-something degrees here that, you know, during that night. But he walked down the street in his slippers and socks and shorts and T-shirt. He looked cold. His nose was red. But, you know, I couldn't help but watch my back because underneath I knew he was probably strapped. And he was, you know, what in the world is he doing down there at Circle K buying a bunch of crap at 3:34 o'clock in the morning?
Right.
You know, and I just, like, it's no good. And I'm thinking to myself, I want to kind of, like, say, you know, hey, son, what are you doing out here? But, you know, I don't want to, you know, get involved, I guess, either. Or, you know, I guess it's kind of scary to approach somebody and ask them, too, you know, at that time in the morning, what are you doing out here?
Yeah, so it's even hard for us now. We were talking earlier about us being a village and trying to help out, but it's even hard sometimes to know how to help these kids or how to even approach them. I think it's great that we have, you know, Second Call and Project Cry No More, people who have even lived the life and been out there and redeemed themselves, being helpful, because I really don't know how to talk to guys involved in gangs right now. You know, I might come off like the preteen mother type, but they need to see other young men who have been out there and saw that, men that are older now, and saw that that road is not the way to go. And hopefully they can coach them and encourage them to come out of the streets and, you know, get their minds right. But it's a terrible, it might sound the same,
hey,
but
wait, hey. I'm waiting for Londa to make that Best of Josie.
Hello?
Did you give her the CDs to make the Best of Josie?
Who was that?
I don't know.
She
was? Maybe that was my cell phone. But, you know, mind is a terrible thing to waste. And one thing we really have to find a way is to educate, to encourage our kids to want to be, to have knowledge. I think that they see all the fast money that other people are making on the street and feel that they could also be a part of that. But most of the time, these gangbangers, they're not making a lot of money, you know?
Right.
they're not able to really provide for their families or help out like they should, or if another one of their family members in the gang is a show, they're not really able to send home any packages or accept all their phone calls. They can't do all of that. So I really want to focus on the youth foundation that I start. There's a mentoring program. It'll probably be on the end more of a preventive measure to work alongside the school with young men who, as soon as you start to see, the school start to see a trend of some kind, they're not coming to school a lot, and they're, you know, starting to fall off with their grades, that we get someone there to encourage them, to help them.
Right.
Because maybe they can't get that from home. Maybe they have to have other people, you know, around them that will help them in that area. So I think that's where we have to start.
All right.
We want to help them. We have to help the young guys who are struggling, because in a lot of meetings that I go to, they talk about how, you know, a young man getting from his home to school can be a dangerous path to travel. And to
Definitely.
Go from the school back home is still a dangerous path to travel. So kids, their parents may be at home wanting them to get better grades, but the in-between, coming home and going to school, have their minds so messed up that they give up on going to school and maybe have to carry a gun to protect themselves or find it necessary to the game because they get beat up so much, you know? So I wanted to find a way to start helping those young people. Focus on the young people who are not, quote-unquote, lost in the streets yet, and work with them to get them, to keep them encouraged.
Definitely. Definitely. We're going to take a quick break here, Sandra, and go to a couple of commercials, and then we'll be right back with Rob on the mic. Hang on tight.
Okay.
I went to a party one night. We were all snorting lines, and this guy came up behind me, and he, like, said, "Hey, let's go back here. I know what we can do." And he grabbed me, and I was already high, and I got raped. My name is Jen. I'm 15 years old. I started doing meth when I was 11 years old. Kept saying no, and he wouldn't stop. And I just kind of cried afterwards, and he gave me an 8-ball, and I just said, okay, that was worth it. And then that's when I started selling my body for meth. I know a lot of my friends said, you're going to get addicted really bad and real quick. And I just kept saying, no, I'm not addicted. And it kind of just turned out that I wanted it every day. And I did really stupid things. I sold myself. And I stole from people, and I cheated people. I don't know anyone who's quit using meth after they've tried it a couple times or just once.
Brought to you by the Meth Project.
The money. The rise to power. Violence. Gangs. Drugs. Death. Self-destruction. Prison. The true life story of Detroit kingpin Rob Boyd, a must-read book. This book will be available online worldwide to order at thestreetsdontloveyouback.name.com, at amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, indiebound.org, and borders.com. Also available in Detroit at Harlem World Books and Videos, and at Human Bookstore on Frederick Douglass Boulevard. It's everywhere, so go ahead and order your autographed copy today. The streets don't love you back.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And we're having a great, great time and with the young lady tonight, but at the same time, we definitely want the fans to hear the message, and the message is plain and clear. The streets don't love you back, and you have to be careful out here with this killing and with this violence and taking people's lives that you can't replace back, you know? And that's definitely the topic of the night, because you don't only destroy the individual, you destroy your whole family, you know? So we must definitely get that message straight across out here to these wannabe gangsters, and when they ain't got no guns, they ain't gangsters, you know what I mean? So we must concentrate on that, definitely, you know? And we asking everybody across the nation in every neighborhood to let's start getting together, you know, with these youth rallies and like Second Call do in L.A. and the visuals on Wednesdays, you know, because this is a global problem. This just ain't an L.A. problem, you know, or Arizona or Detroit problem. It's a global problem. So we must get involved and started being a voice in our neighborhood. You know, how can you own a house in a neighborhood and the drug dealer and the thug down the street on the corner talking about this his neighborhood, you know? And I don't see his name on no deed nowhere. So how is this your neighborhood, brother? You know, you just live over here, but you ain't contributing nothing but violence and death and misunderstandings, you know? So them the type of people we have to get out the neighborhood, you know? Them the ones. And I don't condone people. Don't get me wrong when I say this, people, but them the kind of people need to be in the cage somewhere until they learn how to act, you know? Because how can a wild animal be living in civilization? That's impossible, you know?
That's impossible, right. Absolutely. I so agree with that. And you know what?
Well, I like to just keep it real on the show.
I love it. You know what's so ironic about that, what you said about the neighborhood and everything? This young man, his family, they live 5 blocks away from me. So needless to say, I have seen his mom at places where I had to turn around. My daughter used to go to school exactly directly across the street from where they live. So not only did it cause a problem, these young people have to know that even the problem that they cause is bigger than them, and it gets more out of control than they can handle.
Right. Than they even participated, because, you know, you just one guy that created this whole, you know, this big misunderstanding that gets totally out of control, you know? Because, you know, when you take somebody's family member, whether it's a poster's child, cousin, father, brother, uncle, whoever, you know, people in society nowadays, they go on feelings, you feel me? So if I'm hurting, I want to hurt you back. You know, this is where society comes from in America. You know, if you take mine, I want to take yours. You know, it's by the grace, straight up, ladies and gentlemen. It's by the grace of God that some people don't go out here and just nut all the way up. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And
yeah.
A lot of people don't understand it's by the grace that I don't nut up because you took mine. You know. So we get in a frame of mind sometimes where we don't care if we're in the courtroom, we don't care if we're at the jailhouse or whatever we at. Once that rage hit us, we all across the prosecutor's desk. You know what I mean? I have seen this with my own eyes. This ain't something I'm just saying, you know?
Right.
People in society, as individuals, we go on emotions and feelings. And that is the bottom line. When you hurt mine, I want to hurt yours. You take one of mine, I want to take 5 of yours. You know what I mean? So this is the mentality of people, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I go back to the same thing again. It's by the grace that keep us from nothing up out here in this place we call America, you know? And
absolutely.
A lot of people need to understand that. If you take my coffee, you can't replace my coffee. But if you take my child, I can't sit here and say I'm going to forgive you, because even though the Father in heaven say we must forgive, sometime in life, when you take my loved one, that is a very hard forgiveness, you know?
You know.
And that is that process of forgiveness. You feel me? That ain't just overnight, brother, I forgive you. That is a process that a grieving parent or a grieving loved one go through to get up to the table of contest to say forgive, you know? So that is something to be respected.
Absolutely. I'm glad that you talked about that, because that's where I'm dealing with that every day. Like, we talk about the struggle of it all and the forgiveness part. I'm not even there yet, but every day I have to keep myself together. You know, this I said before, it has changed me so much. I have to really work on keeping me together and not, when I go to court, I have envisioned in my mind going off, just losing it on all of them women up in here that come to represent him and disrespect me. But, it's a hard place to be in. This cat stole from me. He stole from me. He took from
And he robbed you. He didn't just stole, he robbed you.
Yes, he robbed me. And I,
Bottom line, I want
a piece of him, stole something terrible. It's hard to
understand. I'm going to just say this right here. Go ahead, Sophie.
Yes, no, I'm listening. Go ahead and say that.
I was going to say, the reason I spoke on that hard to forgive thing, and I want to give a shout out to Miss Vicki Lindsley out in L.A., a friend of me and my wife, and I just want to say we interviewed her on our Change reality show, and the words that Miss Vicki used were so much of powerful words, you know, it was unbelievable because I had never heard words put like that when a loved one is lost, you know? And like she said, you know, she knew the father say, forgive, you know, in life.
Yeah.
But Miss Lindsay straight spoke nationwide. I can't forgive this guy because he took mine and he can't replace mine. You know,
right.
he can replace my coffee if he spill it on me.
Right.
But he took my child that I carried for 9 months.
Right.
So
right.
if I'm wrong, Father, she asked the Father to forgive her because that
right.
is something so hard and heinous to forgive because her child didn't come up missing because he was kidnapped. He didn't come
right.
up missing because he ran away. You know what I mean?
Right.
Here go a stupid, I call him stupid. Here go a stupid individual chose to take my son's life, you know? So that is a struggle within itself when it comes to somebody robbing you of your loved one, you know, because he didn't run away.
And the thing is, let's just talk about and break down this gang situation. You know, there's a war in Iraq. And if these guys wanted to have guns and be a part of a gang, they could have been representing the red, white, and the blue and got paid to shoot all day and all night. But they choose to terrorize the neighborhood where we live 5 blocks away from each other, you know? So they're not really...
They kill their own time.
Exactly. One who looks just like him. So you're not... They're not big men on campuses. They really are punks who need their behinds whooped. That's what they really are. And anybody can be a big man with a gun. Put that gun down.
Amen.
Darrell, 6'5".
And we can handle that.
Darrell was 6'5", 26-year-old, grown man. He would have handled the situation like it was supposed to be handled. You know, we could have worked it out, and then both of them could have walked away. Maybe never spoke again, but lives would have been saved. How do you solve
that? Right. Nobody's dead.
Right.
It's another thing I want to touch upon, too, since we're talking that gang thing, you know. I say all the time, you know, back a long time ago before you and I was born, you know, Lincoln freed the slaves. You feel me? Where I'm going to go with this, I hope everybody here is truly listening, you know.
I'm listening.
We always talk about our ancestors, you know. We always talk about, you know, the African thing, and, you know, we always talk about all this black power and this peace thing, and we go all the way there, right?
Yes.
But now, on the flip side of the game, you know, our ancestors, you know, paved the way for us to be free, you feel me? It became a Martin Luther King. But then when Martin Luther King was born by the grace of God, he paved the way with others for the black man, the black woman to vote. You feel me?
Yes.
But on the flip side of that, if you look at Martin Luther King marches, it wasn't just only black people in that march. It was white, Hispanic, and other colors in that march. Now, this is where a lot of people get the game twisted at. If we call ourselves wanting to be so free, why in the world do we enslave our own self? You feel me?
So we
let Lincoln free us from back in the day, and our ancestors give us freedom. You feel me? But in the long run, we have to ask ourselves, was we really free from our own self? You feel me?
Because we
enslaved our own self, because now we want to kill each other. We want to be gangbangers. We want to be thugged out. You feel me? But, you know, everybody used that old-time excuse, all the white men holding me down. Brother, I don't see no white man giving you no pistol saying, go rob your fellow sister. I don't see no white man giving you no pistol telling you to go rob your fellow neighbor. I don't see no white man telling you to go rob your sister. I don't see no white man telling you to go invade the home, you know what I mean, that somebody done failed you before. Now you take it from them. Come on now. You feel me? So if we keep allowing this, if we keep allowing them to be in our neighborhoods, so-called gangbangers, so-called thugs, it's time for people in your own neighborhood to stand up and get this infested cancer out the neighborhood. Because if we don't stand up in these neighborhoods nowadays, it's going to be guys just like the one who killed your little man. It's going to be guys like the one that killed several people. You feel me? We in the neighborhood must stand up for our own neighborhood. Now, we can't wait for the police. We can't wait for Congress to give us nothing. We can't wait for time while I'm sitting on the dock of the base. It's time to set up, people. It's time to open your eyes. It's time to realize that we have done enslaved ourselves by staying in the house, looking out the window, and letting these fools run through your neighborhood, selling their pistols, shooting all night long. We have to stop that.
We have to, absolutely. And that's a good point. Like I told you, I did start, you know, a neighborhood watch. And at first it was pretty a nice group of people, a nice handful of people or whatever. But slowly it died off. You know, no one's really concerned until it hits their doorstep. And as a unit of people, we need to be concerned about any time someone is out in our neighborhoods causing problems, writing graffiti, or hanging out in the corners, or any of those things, we need to be concerned. We can't always point fingers, because then when the police start arresting our young men, and sometimes it's for the right things, and sometimes they are wrongly arrested, then we're saying that they're getting football numbers and they're being treated unfairly. But all the police and the government know to do is make some more laws.
Amen.
What we have to do in the houses and in our communities is raise our kids. You know, bring them in to have a communication where, you know, our kids know respect. So I've seen kids on the bus stop breaking down weed in broad daylight. My son, Jarrell, got shot at 6:30 daylight time. This guy is walking, well, he was in a car, walking down the street with a gun at 6:30 in the day. My God. We have to make a difference. We run around.
And he's thinking that's cool.
We run around, like I said before, about the part about you want to be a terrorist, you know, for lack of a better term. You're terrorizing a neighborhood where your mama has to live, where we have to walk the streets together. He's put his mama in jeopardy over his foolishness. But here
yes,
you could have been to the service. He could go to the service, carry a gun all day, wear all the different colors you want to wear and get paid to shoot people. But they don't want to do that.
They're going to keep killing their own kind and blaming everybody else.
Right. And then have the two families kind of at each other because, you know, I come from a family of people that it could have gone either way. I'm just asking them to let the justice system work out. You know, but that's how I say, because ignorance, we don't need more ignorance on top of the ignorance we already have. But that's what also keeps it going. You know, you kill somebody and one person started, like you said earlier, and then they know some people in that family that's crazy, and those people kill somebody else. We need to stop the killing, period. Stop it.
Right. Because it do nothing to start up more turmoil. It do nothing to start up more violence on top of violence. You feel me?
Right.
And that's
right.
What we need to get out toward these people. You feel me? Everybody,
right.
You know, a lot of these brothers and sisters, they have this young generation, especially along with a few of these old heads, they done enslaved themselves, and they continue to enslave themselves, and they continue to lie to themselves. You feel me? And
yeah.
They know what's really real, but nobody want to face what's real. You feel me? Everybody want to point blame, you know? But you can't blame nobody else no more. You can't say the white man holding you down. That's the oldest story in American history, bro. You can put that story way back in the back of your memory bank, because that's been over with, player. You feel me? You got more opportunity than that than you ever had, you know? So you can't even
right.
hear that card up, like, ever again.
And then the one about being a single parent, raising a black male child, you can't say that can't be done either, because I did it. You know, my son did not have a jail record. He didn't have, he had a few, no tattoos, no baby mama drama. And I worked hard every day to provide for my kids. So that is a thing that you can't say no more.
Thank you. You know, so that didn't always happen. You know, you raised the child up, ain't had no record. So, only because you're in a one-parent household don't mean you got to turn out to be a damn fool, excuse my language.
No. Right. Absolutely. Amen to that, brother. Yeah, so you know what? Really, pretty much all the excuses are out the window. Even if your home life is not what you feel it should be, as an individual, at some point, we should think that we want a little bit more than what you have. You know what I mean?
Amen.
You have to start.
Amen.
All the excuses are out. This is interesting that we're talking about this, and I'm a preschool teacher, so I'm going to bring some education in here. We're getting ready to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday and the nonviolence.
Amen.
There was a time when we couldn't even go to school together. There was a time where if the school was in your neighborhood, if it was an all-white school, you had to walk blocks and miles to get to your school. So there's no more excuses. You can go to school. You can go to college. You can start your own business.
You can do whatever you choose to do.
Yes, but like you said earlier, we are enslaving ourselves and using excuses. Now, there are some other societal ills that we talked about earlier, crack, and a lot of these kids are coming out of the crack baby generation because it's taken about, we'll say, 30 years for these kids to grow up. So the lack of what they didn't have, their mom and dad not being around, has caused them to be some hard kids to deal with. But then we need to say that if you saw something at home that you didn't like, why would you keep repeating it?
Definitely.
And I also want to drop this for all the women. Women have to know that they have the power. Because you said earlier, we're the ones that carry the baby for 9 months. Love and daddy don't have any disrespect, don't want to disrespect any men, but the attachment that a woman has to a child is a great thing. So we need to make better choices about having our babies and who we have our babies with. We're having, you know, all these gangbangers are having gangbanger kids who come to school dressed up like bangers, whose mouths are filthy like bangers, little kids. Women have the power. Raise the kids without men. Yes, they do.
Right. Sandra, I don't know if you've seen the video that I have on the website or on Facebook, but it's on YouTube as well. My little gang education video.
Oh, what's the name of it?
So you want to be a gangster?
Oh yes, I have seen that. Yes.
Yeah, those pictures of those little kids dressed up like gangbangers, I actually got off the internet. So they're real pictures that I went out there and found. So if that doesn't show you, the mamas and daddies are dressing up their kids thinking, oh, he's cute, look at the bandana on his head, or look at the gun he's holding, or, you know, the little kids, I mean, young teenagers, 8, 9, 10, 11, holding guns. Those are actually real pictures that I got off the internet. So, you know, for anybody
that
has seen that video,
affair.
Check
this
it out.
Sad.
It
yeah,
is.
I've seen those. It's very sad. That's why I want to keep stressing the fact that education is very important and women have the power. My son at 26, Jarrell, couldn't come up in this house with a whole bunch of foolishness. It wasn't going down. He wasn't going to do it to me. He wasn't going to disrespect me or his sisters and brothers. We have a lot of people who are allowing, a lot of women, who are allowing their male and female children to come home recklessly living their lives. Coming home, bringing in guns and weed and whatever their hearts desire, and no one is drawing the line. Women have the power. You choose who you want to have a baby by, and then whether you like him anymore or not, raise your child yourself. And raise a child as a respectable person. It's a shame that we have these kids out here so disrespectful as a kid.
Yeah.
Right, and you know, most of the, I'm not going to say all, but I could tell you probably 99% of the gang members are using drugs or getting high on some form of drug or alcohol. But, you know, they're under that influence as well, and when they're under the influence, it's easier for them to go out and do things. But
right.
Like we've said over and over and over, gangs, you know, if you're living the gang and the thug and the drug life, it's very short-lived, and you know, if you live to be 20, you know, you'll probably be in jail.
Right.
And the ones that have survived and got out, like Rob and other people that we know, they're out here trying to teach the young ones that it's not good. We regret what we did, and it's bad, and it's not, you know, the only thing that can save you is having an education. That's the only thing that nobody can ever take from you, the education, the knowledge that you have in your head. So, you know, it's just, if they could only know ahead of time and understand, you know, then they probably wouldn't get involved.
Yeah, and we just have to continue to try and motivate the ones who are doing the right thing and encourage them to be examples for, you know, the other kids to see. You know, hey, I didn't say possibly young people, not possibly, young people will have to be the role model for other young people because peer pressure is everything. So somehow we have to find a way to reverse the curse that we have on our young people right now because they're all going towards this fast life of being, you know, disrespectful and living recklessly. We have to let them know that, you know, you have to do things in moderation because we are getting older and they are the ones to follow. And from what we're seeing right now, we're in grave danger of having a town or a country of people that are just out of control on a wider scale. You know, they said that the end of 2010 was a pretty good year as far as homicides. I believe they said there was only 300 for the year, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe that month. 300 is good, but there's still too many.
What?
You know, we have to get to the point where our kids understand that being in the gang is not glamorous. Carrying around a gun and using that to solve your problems is not the answer. And the effect, the ripple effect that it has, Adrian is and Jarell grew up together, the young lady called first, and her life has been changed, and she's saddened a lot because she lost her big brother. You know, the ripple effect of what these guys are doing to their families and to other families is just insurmountable.
Right.
Amen, you know. So we would just like to say we've been having a great message tonight. And like we said, we just pray and hope that people has been receiving this message, you know. And we would just like to get a young lady the last words, any shout-outs you would like to give anybody and any last message you would like to share with the viewers.
Yes, I do. Once again, want to acknowledge Ceasefire and Second Call and Project Cry No More. And as it was stated earlier, Ceasefire has been honored tonight by the LAPD for the great work that they are doing. These young men are giving back. They were caught up in the problem, and now they're becoming part of the solution. So my hat's off to them. And they've been a great support, a source of strength for me. And also, this, the bottom line is stop the killing. That's all I want to say.
Stop the killing, and you know, the most important thing for parents is to communicate with your kids. You know, spend time with them, know what they're doing, know who their friends are, because, you know, if you know like my dad used to always tell me who your friends are, or tell me who you hang around, and I'll tell you who you are.
Right.
So know who your kids' friends are, you know, have time to talk to them and know what they're doing with their life, and a lot of, you know, that will save a lot of hardship.
Yeah, show up, that's a good point. Show up as a parent in their life all the time. Be involved in what they're listening to, like you said, who they're hanging out with. Be the parent. Stop trying to be their friend. Be their parent.
Exactly.
Women have the power. Act like you know you have the power.
Right. He's the mother, not the friend.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to thank you guys so much for this time. I appreciate what it is that you are doing, and I believe that together it's going to take more, no matter than either. It's going to take all of us making a difference. And God bless you,
Amen.
Bob and Lucinda.
All right, we appreciate that. And any last comments or messages you have, baby?
I just want to encourage everybody to join our movement at the www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.ning.com, or you can also go just to thestreetsdontloveyouback.com, and it will get you to the right link. Join our movement. Share with us what you can do to help in your community. And, you know, we're still trying to work and schedule our 50-city tour. You know, we want to get to all the states and all the cities that we could possibly get to, so we're looking for people to reach out to, people to help set up these youth rallies so that we can come out along with a few of our other friends who have lived this life and changed. And we want to talk to the kids and let them know, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and give them hope and encourage them to make the right decisions and the right choices in life. And so, you know, get hooked up with this. Try to bring us out to your city. Get something scheduled up, and just get involved. We have a guest next Wednesday night. His name is Daniel Harshaw. He's the author of a book called Bulletproof Love, Loyalty Before Betrayal. And this young man grew up also in the east side of Detroit and spent some time in prison and got out, and he's changed his life and trying to do positive things. So we're going to hear from him next Wednesday night. Get on and listen to the show.
And I just want to say the last thing. People can order the Streets Don't Love You Back book now on Google. You can Google the e-book up, and you can read a few pages of the Streets Don't Love You Back book, and you can buy it and download it instantly to your computer. So it's on ebook on Google now. So you definitely can get that masterpiece and that message piece that can really open in your eyes up that the streets definitely don't love you back, you know? So we just want to encourage people to start youth rallies in their neighborhood, in their city. And let's start doing our thing, you know, because we must show the youth and others that the streets definitely don't love you back. And that's the bottom line, you know? And I'll pass the mic back over.
Did you have something to say, Sandra?
No, I just wanted to say good night and God bless you guys.
Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you very much, and God bless you and your family as well.
And we just once again want to thank all of the listeners and all of the callers tonight for participating. Pass the message, pass our website, and just encourage everyone to make the right decision, the right choice. And, you know, we're here if anybody needs to talk to us about anything or getting interventions going in your neighborhood. Get with us. And that's about all I have to say, baby. Back to you.
All right, have a great night, everyone. Thanks for calling in.
We're going to go out with a song, Guide and Protect Us. Have a great night and a great week, and we will see you here next Wednesday night, same time, 11:30 Eastern Time, 8:30 Pacific Time. And remember, the streets don't love you back.
Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray, give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray, yeah. The one who is there when no one has a care, I say, Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray, yeah. And lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way, Lord. And your countenance, Lord. You show me the light and the dark, now I shall resist. Yeah, with all of my strength, I will find bliss in iron fist, Lord. The breeders of hate and the thieves, they don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray, give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. With enemies close all around, I will call your name, yeah. And slaughter the weak, you quickly with no thought or shame, Lord. For my heart is so I've no disgrace, no. I'll hail up your name every day with a smiling face, boy. I never can give in a praise to your tenderness, Lord. To be in your infinite grace is my happiness, yeah. No matter the time or the place, you're a miracle, Lord. And the dark, so I shall resist. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray, give thanks for your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. Yeah, we tried the long rocky road. The Buffalo soldier fights the power freedom war. The last we step on the throne, the conquering disciples from your congregation. Yeah, yeah. Collect the security, we build a better nation. Time besides the unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war. But brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes. Live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things, we're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love, so I will always try to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray. Guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray, give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.